There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin.
My name is Jamie.
And you're listening to the podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
It's true. Hey, guess what?
Yeah, what?
Women in movies usually are not portrayed well or at all.
Oftentimes,
just
not
a hot
even
fact
at all.
To start the cast out.
Ever seen the movie The Thing? Pretty sure there's no women in it.
No, is that a vagina monster movie?
You could probably argue yes.
I went on a date last night, and I pre-gamed by watching Teeth.
I didn't know you went on a date.
Listen, it was
why?
Fine.
Why didn't you tell me?
I know that we're codependent. I did. It was an impromptu, and I was in the middle of watching Teeth. I'm like, let me just finish watching Teeth, and then sure, let's meet up.
Yeah, that's a great way to
Yeah, leave. I can't recommend watching Teeth before going on a first date enough. Mm-hmm. A blast.
If you're not familiar with the movie Teeth, we'll get there. But it's about a woman whose vagina is full of teeth,
and
she bites. Yeah, she bites dudes' dicks off.
Yeah,
with her
vigilante justice, feminist icon, teeth. Yeah, so this is the Bechdel cast we use for our yardstick of how women are treated in film. We use the Bechdel test, inspired by Alison Bechdel, and our interpretation of it is the movie must have two female characters with names speak to each other at some point in the movie about something other than a man. Only has to be, I think that this comes up a lot, people are like, it has to be a whole scene. Then nothing would pass. It literally has to be two lines of dialogue.
Yeah,
that happens.
The lowest bar possible.
All right.
And yet so many movies manage to still not pass the Bechdel test.
Some of the most famous movies of all time.
Yep.
I'm excited about the movie we're talking about today.
Yes.
Yeah.
So before we talk about it, though, let's introduce our guest.
Yeah.
She is a comedian. She is terrific. Emily Heller.
Hello.
Beow, 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 beow. Ooh, are you doing Mrs. Doubtfire?
I am. Why wouldn't I?
Hello.
Hello.
Amazing.
That really, it always gets a laugh.
It always does. So we're talking about Mrs. Doubtfire.
When
did you first see the movie? What's your history with this movie?
Okay, I definitely saw it as a kid, possibly when it came out. I don't remember.
Okay.
But then I definitely watched it again as an adult, you know, maybe like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And then again yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm from the Bay Area, too, so...
Okay.
Oh, wow,
you know,
okay.
The bus that Mrs. Doubtfire gets on is a bus I used to ride when I lived there.
That exact bus?
The 22
like the 22,
Fillmore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, I started comedy in San Francisco, so it was like Robin Williams was, like, around.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But, yeah, so I feel, like, pretty connected to this movie in a lot of ways.
Sure. This movie was a huge movie of my childhood. There were, like... probably like 10 different movies that I just watched all the time. This was one of them. I saw The Brave Little Toaster a lot.
Yeah.
Jumanji.
Oh, yes. Jumanji.
Homeward Bound.
I've never seen Jumanji.
Dude, I got in so much trouble. Like, the most trouble I ever got in as a kid was when I was 11 years old. It was the first time ever my parents were letting me go to the movies without an adult. Mm-hmm. They organized this whole thing where this big group of girls were going to go see Tom and Huck.
Ooh, yeah.
That JTT movie. And then while we were in line waiting to buy tickets, one of the girls revealed that she had not seen Jumanji. And we were all like, you haven't seen Jumanji? And we got to the front of the line. And we were like, does Jumanji get out at the same time as Tom and Huck? And they were like, yeah. And they were like, we're seeing Jumanji instead. Like, I changed the plans. We went to go see Jumanji instead. Jumanji did not get out at the same time as Tom and Huck. It got out 20 minutes later.
Uh-oh.
And my mom, who had showed up to the movie theater to pick us up, thought we had all been kidnapped.
Abducted she waited, from a showing she, of Tom and Huck.
She waited outside the exit of Tom and Huck, watched every single person leave. None of us were in there.
Oh,
and she was so furious with me.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever end up seeing Tom and Huck, though?
No, I didn't.
No.
Here's the thing.
But I did see Jumanji again.
Tom and Huck, it's fine. JTT, very, I mean.
Yeah, I wasn't that big of a JTT fan. I mean, I kind of was, but I didn't really know.
Was JTT, is he, because there's JTT and then every child slash teen actor of that era who looks exactly like him but wasn't him.
Mm-hmm. No one looked exactly like him.
That's he. No one had the same sparkle.
It was his truly. It was his coloring of like the dark eyebrows and the light eyes and then the sandy hair. It was like a very unusual
the
look.
Contrast.
Yeah,
the contrast was
and the
gorgeous.
Like smirky smile.
I can't even
was
picture
he
what he looks
Muppet
like.
Treasure Island is or is that a JTT poser?
Oh, great question.
You know what?
Well, let me check it out.
I'm most familiar with Muppet Christmas Carol.
Stop the podcast. Stop the gang. It's not him.
It's not him.
Nope.
Yeah, there's just a lot of lookalikes out there.
I do like on a Muppet movie Wikipedia page, they bill all of the Muppets before any human. Top billed is Kermit the Frog, as it should be, I guess.
Of
but
course.
Kermit the Frog got billed before Tim Curry.
Amazing.
A beautiful thing. Anyways, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, baby.
So yeah, I saw this movie a ton as a kid, but I hadn't seen it probably for 15 or 20 years.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Watching it again, whew. Interesting.
It's super
interesting things that happen. Yeah. What about you, Jamie? What's your history?
I didn't see this movie for a while. My older cousins would watch it all the time, but I wasn't allowed to. And then eventually, I think I probably saw it around the time I was like 7 or 8, and then probably again in high school, and then again for this. But I haven't seen it in like a good, at least between 10 and 15 years. Like it's been a bit. And
yeah. There have been some big cultural shifts that would have that make this movie somewhat impossible now. Mm-hmm. I will say the writer of this movie, Randy Myam Singer, mm-hmm. she and I follow each other on Twitter. She's an outspoken mm-hmm. feminist. She seems really cool.
All right, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. The movie was written by two women and then it's adapted from a novel also written by a woman.
There's a lot of interesting gray area in
this. Was adapted
this
from
story.
A novel?
Yes. A novel called Madame Doubtfire, I think.
Alias Madame Doubtfire.
Oh, my God.
By Anne Fine. I love Alias Madame Doubtfire. Makes it sound like a spy movie.
Yeah.
Which it sort of is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely spying on his family and his wife and her new relationship.
Stu.
Pierce Brosnan.
Stu.
Also directed by Chris Columbus of the first two Harry Potter movies
mm-hmm.
and Home Alone fame.
Yeah. And the really stinky on-screen adaptation of Rent.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
Oh, Chris
Heart
Columbus.
Bath.
You're all over the place, buddy. What's happening? Anyways, he's a millionaire. We're fine.
I'll do the recap of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Doubtfire is about a man named Daniel Hillard, played by Robin Williams, and he's a party animal. He has kids and he loves them. And he wants to have fun with them. And he's a cool
fun dad. He's a
fun
bad dad.
Yeah. And he is married to Miranda, played by Sally Field, and he throws a party for his 12-year-old son. And she comes in on it. The house is a mess. She's like, this is too much.
Well, and she had told him he wasn't allowed to have a birthday party because his grades were too low.
Right.
So this is a classic, the cool parent overriding the mean parent. Like, they're mm-hmm.
he's like acting like a dad who's already been divorced.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, why are you acting out of spite like this towards a woman you're currently married to? Well,
So yeah, she comes home. She's fed up with all of his antics and she's like, let's get a divorce. And he's like, no. And in the divorce proceedings, he's granted no custody except for like he can only see them on Saturdays or something like that. Yeah. So he's like, I need to see my kids more. Mm-hmm. And he finds out that Miranda's going to take out an ad in the newspaper to hire a housekeeper. So he goes to his brother, who is a makeup artist for the movies. For Hollywood, except not he because they're in San Francisco.
First, he sabotages the ad so that she can't get any real inquiries.
Yes. Right. Some classic print journalism manipulation.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so he calls and puts on this whole facade of like, I'm the best. I'm Mrs. Doubtfire.
Well, yeah, so his brother, who is like does makeup for movies,
yeah.
he calls him up and says, make me a woman. Mm-hmm. And his brother says, I'm so happy for you, which is like... Oh, this is a joke I didn't notice as a kid.
Right.
There are tons of those.
And,
yeah,
and begs a lot of questions of like, why did he like that doesn't the character and that statement didn't necessarily like line up. But I was like, oh, interesting. What's mm-hmm. the story there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he makes all these like this prosthetic mask and this whole bodysuit and everything like that to turn Daniel into Mrs. Doubtfire. And then he poses as the family's housekeeper. 4 months?
Yeah, it seems like it's months.
Yeah, it's a while.
Sally Field, while an intelligent and empowered woman, does not recognize that it's her ex-husband is.
That is definitely the biggest buy in this movie is that she does not recognize him.
Right, because she's capable in literally every other way.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, I don't know if either of you have been in like a long-term relationship, but
no.
There's one thing I know very well, and it's my boyfriend's face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I see that thing all the time. I know exactly what his teeth look like. I know exactly. I know, you know, and they did do like fake teeth and like lots of prosthetics and stuff like that. But fucking
but
come
still
on.
But you is recognizable know. As Robin Williams. Yeah.
Yeah. You've had 3 children with this. Like, yeah, you know what he
this person has been inside you.
Yeah.
You would think you would know. As someone who has never been in a long-term relationship but knows how faces work, I too think I would recognize. Anyway, yeah, so no one, I feel like that's a big problem for the movie Tootsie as well, but.
Yeah. Well, another thing is this movie is set in San Francisco, which I think at the time probably had one of the most robust transgender communities in the entire country.
Right.
You don't live in San Francisco and not know about transgender people, mm-hmm. especially if you're like an adult. What I'm saying is, like, it's a lot easier for transgender people to pass sometimes in, like, the middle of America or like, mm-hmm. places where there are no transgender people because no one's looking for it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that that also wasn't a factor in this, like, there's a few tongue-in-cheek jokes, but mm-hmm. you're like, why is this set in the one city where this would be the hardest to pull off?
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. unnecessary.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. maybe she thought that Mrs. Doubtfire was just a transgender woman and just didn't say anything about it, which would be interesting also. But
for 1992, yeah. it would be pretty progressive to not call out in a movie. Yeah.
But there's no mention of that. And instead, there is like whenever Daniel is making calls to basically make it so that Mrs. Doubtfire, when she calls, is going to be like the best possible scenario.
Yes. Oh, right.
Because he does this whole like montage of calling.
Of calling, of doing like bad candidates.
Yeah.
And one of the bad candidates is him saying,
I don't work with the males because I used to be one. And then,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, I gotta go.
She's like, yikes, and hangs up the phone. And it's like,
but
not.
Also, like, so I get that it was teeing up that terrible transphobic joke, but why would a transgender woman not want to work with boys? Like, logically, right. like, setting aside the transphobia of that joke. What is the logical explanation for...
Makes no sense.
Yeah, it just doesn't track on any level.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, Daniel works as Mrs. Doubtfire for the family's housekeeper
for a long
months.
Time.
Yes.
Taking care of the kids, being a better father than he ever had been before, basically.
Yeah. Which and is then, kind of in some ways makes him more culpable because it's like, okay, you understand how rules can benefit children
right.
and you understood it before, you just were unwilling to enforce it.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Cool.
But as a woman, not as much of a problem.
Yeah.
There's some weirdness going on.
Yeah. And then his 2 older children find out about his true identity.
And he tells them to keep it a secret.
Right. And then toward the end, at the big dinner scene with all the switcheroos between his, like, big work opportunity and then the birthday dinner.
For his ex-wife.
For his ex-wife. Yeah. Sally Field's character finds out, oh, you're actually my husband, faking being our housekeeper this whole time.
Put yourself in Sally Field's.
I mean.
For just a sec. That's
yeah.
The fucking distrust I would have of every person around me for the following 5 years of my life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Especially like, upon finding out that it's like, oh, also two of my children knew and my ex-husband like swore his children to secrecy. There's just, you're just like,
also asked me a lot of questions about my sex life with my new boyfriend.
Yeah. Which just makes the ending of this movie, it's a family movie, but like makes the end completely bananas. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because then, I mean, they have a fight. He's granted no custody. He gets to have
supervised visits.
Yeah. But he starts playing Mrs. Doubtfire on TV. So I guess he's trustworthy.
So I guess it's fine.
And then Miranda approaches him at work and she's like, you know what? Things were better. You should see the kids and da da da. And then.
Because she realizes that she can't find another housekeeper as good as Mrs. Doubtfire and they all miss her. And they're like, she's like, what are we talking about? She's not a real person. Right. Why are we talking? But. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, she opens the door to their new housekeeper, and then it's the reveal that it's Daniel. And she's like, you can hang out with your dad more.
Yeah.
The end.
Every day after school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do kind of think it's interesting that they bothered to include the custody battle of, like, oh, for sure he would not get custody after all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that seemed kind of realistic. Or more realistic than a lot of parts of the movie. But then at the end, it bugged me that like Sally Field's character is the one to be like, you know what? I was not wrong, but like, I forgive you for this massive, weird
breach of trust.
Yeah.
I mean, she does seem like she's being a little bit too forgiving, but she's also like, I think this is the best outcome for my kids. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is,
how do you protect your kids after something like that?
It's so, it's definitely messed up.
But I can see if I were like a kid and then I found out my dad was doing this thing that was like kind of funny to me and kind of bizarre, I would be like, oh, dad, what? But like, cool. I don't know. I wouldn't be like afraid of. Yeah.
I mean, like giving it the most possible credit. It's like she probably assessed that her kids were not traumatized by this.
Right.
Not visibly traumatized by it. And that it was in performing the Mrs. Doubtfire ruse. He demonstrated his willingness to change his parenting style to.
Right.
Adjust for the things that he needed to, but also
Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, it is bizarre because it's like, you know, he is more like, Daniel's more respectful of her parenting style by the end of the movie and definitely like sees the value of it. But again, it's like we sort of see that he knows that at the beginning, he's just not doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He,
this movie is just like, it's
yeah.
But that said, it is A, way longer than I remembered.
So long.
Over 2 hours long.
Oh, man.
It's insanely long.
But it's, I mean, I enjoy this movie. It's just, there's just so much. Like, this movie could not be made right now.
I just keep thinking of the storyline in Arrested Development when Tobias.
The Mrs. Featherbottom combination Mary Poppins and Mrs. Doubtfire thing.
Yeah. But the joke there is that everyone knows that it's clearly Tobias playing this character.
And they're just tolerating it.
Yeah. And letting him do housework.
Right. They're just letting him do free labor.
So one of the first things I wanted to bring up about the movie as it relates to the portrayal of women is a segment that I call Breaking Shrews. It's like breaking news. It's a discussion of all the shrews in the movie.
I appreciate it quietly.
Yeah, thank you so much. Pretty much every female character that we see on screen, basically everyone is presented as a shrewish character in some.
Aside from Mara Wilson's character.
Right.
Yes.
Too young to shrew.
Too young to shrew.
Too young to shrew quite yet.
But just about everyone else, including the older daughter, Lydia, she's the one who's all like, no, we shouldn't have a party. Mom said we couldn't. Later on, she is judging her dad's apartment that he moves into. And she's like, this place is detestable. She's always just kind of being like, rules, rules, rules. I'm no fun. Da, da, da.
Right.
Impossible to Please. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we see the neighbor lady who basically narcs on them for having the party.
Giant disruptive party with barn animals.
Right. Yeah. But she's all like, I'm going to tell on you. And she calls Miranda at work about it. And
who then comes in and shrews out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Shrews herself right into a divorce.
And when I was a kid, I definitely was like, oh, yeah, she's a mean mom.
I was so on Daniel's side when I was a kid.
Yes. For and sure, now I see this movie and I'm like, I'm on Miranda's side.
I'm so on her side. I feel like that's something about this movie that is like both brilliant and sad, which is that like kids totally see the mom character as the bad guy. But as a woman, I was like, oh, this was made for me in some ways, because it's like I feel like in some ways a very compassionate portrayal of Sally Field. She gets ample opportunity to explain all of the ways that Daniel's behavior ruined their marriage.
And it's totally legitimate.
Totally legitimate. And then she gets to have this fucking fantasy hot boyfriend
who's
been following her career, and like her career success is a big part of like why he's attracted to her.
Right.
And he's like totally like giving her everything. In some ways, it's like total wish fulfillment for her in some ways.
Right. Like, oh, I'm just one breakup away
from Stew, from fucking pre James Bond 007.
He is truly a vision in this movie.
He's like, the camera loves him. There's that whole like diving board scene at the pool.
I was just like, I was not expecting to get horny during this movie, but I forgot about Stu.
Yeah. You see Stu's nipples.
You do see Stu's nips.
Yeah.
New sub podcast, Stu's nips. I was expecting going into this movie, because I remember, same as you, like not liking the mom when I was little and being like, oh my God, she's so mean, she's so terrible. And also having a very clear like map in my head of like, this is like my parents, where like my mom is a disciplinarian and my dad is
same dynamic with my parents.
Yeah, I think that's like a lot of kids' parents. And so I remember thinking that mom is so mean. But the movie... Yeah, to its credit, I was expecting a far more like villainized portrayal of Sally Field's character, but she does at every point. Like, I tried to put myself in my mom's head seeing this movie. I'm like, I wonder if she felt heard. I wonder if she felt pissed off when Robin Williams started doing some weird, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on the audience who's consuming this. Like we said, when we're kids, we're like, oh, boo, mean mom. But we as grown women who often either have to ourselves or see other women carrying all the burdens and the emotional labor of maintaining a household. And we're like, yeah, we hear you. We get it.
Yeah.
So, it's just frustrating.
It's
but she
super
is,
frustrating.
You know, nothing's really done to make her seem like a more reasonable, compelling character to the young audience who's seeing this, I think.
Right.
So
right.
We as children, who I think this movie is the target demographic for, or like families, you know,
sure.
People
seeing it
with
together.
Kids.
Yeah.
The movie is like, yeah, she's the shrew. She's the bad guy.
She doesn't get her save the cat moment.
Right.
At all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we're like, there could have been a moment in this movie where... Because she has opportunities to explain where she's coming from. We know that she's not a bad person. She's not a bad parent. Mm-hmm. But
at no point do her kids express an interest in spending time with her. At no point do we understand, like, we as adults can conceptually understand, like, she's doing all this stuff for the good of her children. But at no point as a kid watching this did I think, what a cool mom. You know, I never thought, like... Mm-hmm. You never really see her doing anything for the kids that's like fun.
And sometimes you need that in a movie, especially when you're young. I remember my first movie I saw that took place in San Francisco when I was a kid was The Princess Diaries. And the mom that movie rules. I mean, she works.
Yeah.
She's like a
best.
Full-time artist. But there's like scenes where she and like Mia are like having an awesome time together. And it's like, oh, even though, you know, like she has to have her mom moments like Miranda does in this movie, like we see that there's a relationship there, but that's not really here. And I feel like that might be partially connected to like a working woman kind of stigma of like, oh, she's not a bad mom, she's a little bit cold kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's got a career. She doesn't have as much time or energy to be a kind, caring mother.
Right.
Yeah.
She's not around enough to realize that her ex-husband in drag is has infiltrated her home. She's a little cold. She's a little distant.
Yeah.
The custody scene, the first custody scene, is really interesting for, like, understanding people's ideas of parenting at the time.
Yeah.
Because the judge in the moment is basically saying, like, when he's making the ruling of, like, Daniel getting one day of custody, is he was like, you know, usually these favor the mother, but recently we've realized that kids need dads. Like, it's yeah. like a very weird sort of like, wait, what? Like,
with that, when I was watching that this time, I was like, was that supposed to be like a joke? Was that supposed to be like a little progressive, like, wink to, like,
I don't think so.
I couldn't tell what that was intended, how that was intended to land at the time.
And it seemed like he was saying that, like, because Daniel didn't have a job, that was why he would not be a good guardian. And it's like,
right,
but she has a job, and also wouldn't he have more time to be a guardian?
Yeah,
like, that doesn't seem like
it's
confusing.
Unless he meant that
because he doesn't have his shit together.
Yeah,
but
to
still
be able to care for them. But yeah, I don't know.
The whole
well,
thing
that's
is
like
weird.
An interesting comment on like masculinity that the movie's making, because him not having a job is, you know, like a deal is made of it, where
yeah
in some ways, like, I think it's like portrayed a lot of, like, you know, a man not being the breadwinner of the family is portrayed not in extreme ways by this movie, but that's like somehow stripped him of his masculinity in mm-hmm. some ways.
Well, and we should point out too that when we first meet him, it's when he quits his job because they're trying to make him do a pro-cigarette voiceover for a children's cartoon, which is a very easy way to get people on your side,
right,
to be like,
yeah,
I'm quitting because I don't think kids should smoke cigarettes.
And they're like, oh, we're on board. We love this guy.
Yeah. And so you're like, oh, well, it's not his fault he doesn't have a job. Like, he quit in righteous anger.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And I love how the movie portrays that as something that could just happen. Like, oh, no.
There comes
contracts
a time in every
be damned.
Career.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to walk off the job that you probably have signed a contract for and can't just leave by walking off that day.
Yeah.
Anyway. So Sally Field's character is pretty shrewish throughout the movie. There's a few other shrews that I wanted to mention. The grandma, who doesn't even get any lines, and you only see her for like one very brief scene, but
he makes a crack about her being dead.
Yeah, being a corpse and like smelling like formaldehyde. The court liaison lady, Mrs. Selner or something like that.
Yeah.
She's an old shrewish lady with no
she's
sense of humor.
She's basically like his divorce parole officer, which is like not a thing that I realized existed.
I'm not sure that it does.
The way that custody is treated in this movie is like a little uncanny valley. Like, is he being watched that carefully for where are these government resources going? Yeah.
Also, you don't ever see this character on screen, but Daniel's brother, Frank, played by Harvey Feinstein.
Firestein.
Sorry.
I'm sorry for sounding so intense.
Actually,
he is on the phone with their mother, and she's like, bah, 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 like being all.
And he's like, I don't want to talk to mom about my divorce.
Yeah.
Very
overbearing mother.
I didn't even know that.
And they're like, ooh, no thanks. And they're just very dismissive of her. So generally, any woman you see on screen is probably portrayed as a shrew. Oh, and then the housekeeper who comes in to interview at the very end when they're trying to find someone to replace Mrs. Doubtfire, she's all like, I don't do bathtubs, I don't do carpets, I don't do cleaning,
I don't
do
diapers. Reading, I don't do,
Yeah, we're all the...
I'm illiterate. not a single woman in this movie gets to have any fun.
Right.
Except
no fair.
Presumably off screen when Sally Field is fucking Pierce Brosnan.
Oh my God. Can we get what hit the cutting room floor in terms of
Sally
Field?
I hope they did like a full penetration.
I would watch Pierce Brosnan full penetration now, 2017.
Oh yeah.
God.
And I mean, Sally Field is a fun person. There's like a really amazing interview I saw her do on, I think it was Johnny Carson, about when she was fucking Burt Reynolds, and it's very saucy.
Ooh,
Sally.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, it's just kind of not fair that you see all these fun male characters and then no female.
Well, it
female
really,
characters.
Yeah, I guess it really is just Robin Williams who's fun. Because there aren't any other fun guys in this.
I think Harvey Fierstein is still
a little bit of a nag. But he he is more fun, but it is like, well, I'll give him that. There's like a gay character in this movie. There are two gay characters in this movie.
That's true.
Both played by real life gay comedians.
Hey.
Yay.
That's comforting.
So much.
It's him and it's Scott Capurro, who was like a local San Francisco stand-up.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Scott Capurro plays, as Daniel refers to him later in the movie, Aunt Jack.
Aunt Jack.
Right.
Yeah. Who's like Harvey Fierstein's, like, you know, not clearly articulated, like, partner in both business and love. But there's a weird, it's confusing because at the beginning, Harvey Fierstein says, like, make this guy look like a man. And he was like, you would know. And it's like, wait, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Because that seemed like a dig about how rarely he has sex. But then it's like, but they're partners?
But they're together.
That part of it was unclear. But
right.
Well, their relationship seems mostly just professional until that line where...
Yeah, Aunt Jack.
Yeah, he says Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack.
Well, I remember my mom, when I was very young, explaining my two... Like, I have two gay uncles, and she explained their relationship to me based on Mrs. Doubtfire. They're like, You know Robin Williams' brother and Mrs. Doubtfire? It's like that. And it must have registered. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Interesting.
So that was, I guess, possibly the first gay couple I'd seen on screen, or at least the most high profile example, because that was what my mom went to to explain a real life gay couple to me.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Which is weird because it's not done super, super well in the movie, but it was good enough for me to understand.
I really am curious about like the behind the scenes conversations about how to deal with gay issues in this movie, because it seems like there were multiple opportunities for them to like talk about it in a deeper way. Mm-hmm. And they like really swerved around them. And I'm wondering like where that came from, because like it seems like they probably wanted Harvey Fierstein's character to be a drag queen. Like, it seems logical that he would be like, I'm going to go to my brother who's a drag queen and does drag makeup to, like,
As opposed to
a movie industry makeup artist. I guess that explains the latex and stuff. But then later on, at the very end of the movie kind of ends with Mrs. Doubtfire giving, like, on her own TV show, giving this speech in response to a letter from a viewer about the viewer's parents getting divorced. Mm-hmm. And she gives this speech about how, like, the only thing that makes a family is love. And well, families can look like a lot of different things, you know? Some families...
Have one mom.
And some families have one dad. And you're like, but what...
Also... Two mommies?
Also two mommies?
Two dads?
Yeah. And I just have to believe that there's a version where he says that and it's cut out.
I would love to see a first draft of this script. Yeah, because I mean, I have to assume that they got notes on notes on notes in 1993 of what what people were comfortable saying what they weren't. But that's really interesting about Harvey Fierstein's character. That would make way more sense. I'd be interested in how that was portrayed in the book, or if that character even appears in the book.
Yeah,
I mean, the book seems like, when is the book set?
Not sure.
Was this like a modern update of the book? Because it...
No, I think it was released it came out in 1987.
Oh, okay.
For so teenage and young adult audiences.
Yeah, weird. Oh, yeah, I guess that would make sense. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the movie skirting around issues that could have been addressed.
Sure.
There are a few brief moments where Daniel, who is in costume as Mrs. Doubtfire, experiencing life the way a woman might experience life.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so much more commentary could have been made, and it just could have been better handled. He gets hit on by that creepy
bus. Gets hit on repeatedly by a creepy bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like... not even like drive, like stops the bus and is like, are you gonna drive the bus, or are you gonna like trap this woman in your bus? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, at the behest of literally everything else going on.
Yeah.
There's that. And then he gets off the bus and he's wearing heels and he says something like, oh, my back. If I find the misogynist bastard who invented heels, I'll kill him. So there's that kind of throwaway
line.
Yeah,
that's such a softball. Yeah.
No, I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. And then there's a moment where he almost gets mugged in broad daylight crossing a street. A guy, like, snatches her purse, and then he kind of, like, beats him off and gets it back. But those are the only moments where there's any sort of even calls attention to the fact that
he's maybe giving up some of his privilege in playing this character and, like, what that might teach him about what women go through.
Yeah.
This was, like, one of my big things I was taking notes about in, like, the latter half of the movie is, and I think that this is something that Tootsie does different in a way that works better for me. Mm-hmm. That's that I do have to rewatch Tootsie. I'm sure there's something there as well.
Yeah.
But they're at no point does Daniel's character get really into the Mrs. Doubtfire character. It's always like a facade. It's never like where in Tootsie, as I remember, it's a lot of the character arc comes from really like living as this female character and learning how to communicate as a woman and like all this stuff. And there's a real arc there where
I think so.
Like even like the climactic scene with the dinner when he's going back and forth between being a man and being a woman. Like I feel like there's just like there's so much opportunity there to make a real comment and have your character learn a real lesson about something like that. And but it just doesn't really happen.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I feel like the closest it comes is in the scene where Mrs. Doubtfire is having like a heart to heart with Miranda about the divorce.
Yeah.
And it's really Daniel probing her, trying to find out, like, come on, is there any hope for Daniel? Mm-hmm. And surely you must have tried to solve these problems. And she's like, yeah, he didn't want to talk about anything serious. And at a certain point, he turned me into this shrew. And I didn't like who I was with him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he finally gets it. Like, right. That's the point when you see, like, oh, okay, this character is learning something in this scene.
Right.
That was, upon rewatching, one of my favorite scenes, I think. Because mm-hmm. you're like, oh, yeah, you guys weren't a match. Like,
right, yeah.
You guys weren't a match. And also, like, you didn't have some of the necessary communication that you need to have about, like, how you're going to raise your kids together and, like, mm-hmm. what you value in a responsible partner and, like...
And just, like, another impressive way that the movie lets Sally Field's character be heard and, like, yeah. understood. Yeah. Where it's, like, you know, as a kid... You probably don't lose much from the movie by not seeing that scene, but watching it as an adult, yeah, like that's one of the mm-hmm. scenes yeah. where you're like, oh, that's pretty impressive.
Because I didn't remember yeah. that scene even happening.
Of course, you now. Probably tune it out as right. like a scene with two adults
right.
or a scene where something goofy isn't happening or whatever.
I remember yeah. the scene okay. where Mrs. Doubtfire is vacuuming all wild and wacky.
Yes, well, because that was in the trailer. Too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of good trailer. I totally forgot about Stu's character altogether.
Really?
Yes. And so that was a real pleasant, horny surprise for me. It was a real kamikaze horny moment.
Yeah.
This movie is tricky. I think that it's important to mention exactly how huge of a movie this was. This movie was the biggest movie of 93 behind Jurassic Park.
Wow.
Wow.
$25 million budget, $450 million at the box
Whoa.
Office. This
Holy
movie was
shit.
Fucking massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I does this movie do as well in 93 if they make more nuanced points? I don't know.
Probably not. If they didn't do anything, it wouldn't have tested that well with 1993 audiences.
I'd be really interested in like what kind of rewrites this movie went through before it made. Because even in 93, I feel like this movie seems like sort of like a risky movie to be making. But it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is like post-Tootsie. It's like, you know, this is right. like a very well-known movie trope. Mm-hmm. It does seem like they were trying hard to, like, not alienate anyone, but also to give some kind of wink at, like, the gay culture that mm-hmm. made this movie possible. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, I talked to a few trans friends of mine about this movie.
Oh, I'm very interested to hear this.
Yes. So, Riley Silverman, who was on our Batman
Friend
episode.
Of the cast.
I messaged her and I said, I'm curious about your thoughts on movies where a cis character dresses up as or takes on the identity temporarily of a person of a different gender for the sake of the story. Other movies that come to mind are Tootsie, The Birdcage, Some Like It Hot, Shakespeare in Love. Is this inherently problematic? Is it okay as long as no transphobic comments or jokes are made? Something else? Thoughts? She responded and said, it's a gray area for sure. Some trans people will tell you it's inherently awful. I think that's too broad of a brush. I do think with comedies there's a fine line because so many of the jokes are based in the humor of presenting a male-seeming person as female. I sort of feel less bugged by these movies as a trans woman and more just as a woman because so much of it is just really heightened gender role stereotypes. I feel like the fact that guy dressed as woman is meant to be demeaning feels so misogynist to me. And I said, totally, a lot of these movies and TV shows take the stance of a man being feminine. How humiliating.
Yeah, there's like definitely some like
kind of transphobic, isn't it funny for a man to wear a dress type of humor? But then there's also like, there was this whole school of like, wouldn't it be weird if a dad played a role in his kid's life in a real way type of jokes too, where you're like, he doesn't know how to cook. He doesn't know how to clean. Like, he's not a functional adult.
And these are only roles he's willing to learn while not identifying as a man.
Yeah.
Like, somehow it's emasculating if he does that while he's a man.
Right. I mean, later on in the movie, his gross apartment does, you could argue that, you know, what he learns being Mrs. Doubtfire informs his life as a kind of single father now, because he cleans his place, he learns how to cook, but it's only after he has assumed the role of a woman that he bothered to do any of that.
Yeah, grow up, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I said the reverse of this, which the reverse of a male character dressing up as a female character, the reverse of that, like in Shakespeare in Love, where a woman dresses as a man, is empowering, because then she gets to do a thing that she wants to do because people see her as a man and therefore she deserves respect.
Yeah, like it's more of a radical act when women take on drag in movies in order to accomplish something, because it's like understood that her gender is the reason why she can't do it. And in movies like this, it's Yentl, like, oh, no, maybe. Or like one of the guys. And it's like in movies like this, it's like, Mulan. No, it's because a man feels entitled to a place like like in Tootsie. And in this, it's like, no, men dress in drag to gain access to a place they feel entitled to that they aren't entitled to.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. She also brought up She's the Man, the Amanda Bynes soccer vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And then Riley said, I think the bigger problem with this stuff is less the movies themselves and more how people equate them with the trans experience after the fact. And I said, yes, that just shows the huge lack of understanding of what the trans experience is. And she said, yep. And it's part of the demonization of trans people along with trans panic horror films like Sleepaway Camp. And then that was pretty much the end of it. I was just like, thanks for your input. Goodbye. But yeah, so that was that conversation.
I'm glad you guys left it. Yeah. Still friends. I read a very interesting editorial that I found from around the time this movie came out from a drag performer named Charles Bush. He published an opinion piece in the Washington Post when this movie came out that's pretty generally praises the movie in terms of presenting drag to a family audience in a way that he found to be generally respectful, but his main criticism was that it didn't do enough. Like, it appears respectful just because there's not much being said. Where the passage that I highlighted was, although there are glimpses of a fully fleshed out characterization in Robin Williams' portrayal of a 60-year-old Scottish nanny, the humor of the film never rises above the mechanics of how he's going to get in and out of drag. Which I think, like that's as far as it's examined. It's like, isn't the costume funny? And
that's so many of the scenes.
Wild that he has to put this on and take, which is which you know works. And I don't even think that is like a necessarily like horrifying bad thing to see. It's a family comedy in 1993, but it's just like there's a lot of.
That's like 50% of the movie is him getting in and out of the costume.
Yeah, we could cut a half hour out of this movie,
and we should, because it's 2 hours and 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
I also spoke with another trans woman friend named Olivia, asked her the same question, just basically your take on this thing that happens in movies and television. And she said, an interesting thought. Offhand, I would say that as long as there's no real transphobia in punchlines or the narrative, then it should be fine. I know that before I came out or even really knew I was trans, I was drawn to narratives about gender swapping and that sort of thing. So I think even if there are some problematic elements that are inherent to the times they were made in, overall their effects might be positive. So for her, it was like, oh, interesting that I can see a story about this, even if it's not really identical to the trans experience or anything like that. It's still like,
there's a possibility for something positive to be gleaned from just like even watching gender be played with in any way.
Right.
Yeah.
Without the punishments being so, like, it's not being demonized. It's just being utilized in a kind of bizarre way.
I will say there's like a really awful moment when Daniel's two older kids find out about the Mrs. Doubtfire ruse, and his son is like, it's a he-she, we gotta call the police.
Yes. Yeah.
And that part of it, you're like, okay.
Also, is a child being raised in San Francisco really saying that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I certainly hope not. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the San Francisco element is like the biggest sort of like question mark on
this. Is that
this,
a budget thing? Like, I don't understand.
Well, I think it was Robin Williams is from the Bay Area, and he lived there. And I think whenever he had the opportunity, he would shoot things there so he could be with his family and stuff. And Zelda, his daughter, is one of the extras in the party scene.
Oh, fun.
She's a little girl jumping on a couch.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene was very uncomfortable. But apart from that and that moment that we mentioned before where Sally Field hangs up the phone being like, oh, you used to be a man? Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
Those are the only two sort of blatantly transphobic moments that I...
There's like definitely sort of a... I don't know how, if it, I mean, I'm even in a position to call it subtle or not, but there's definitely something problematic about like storylines that hinge on someone's true gender identity or sex being hidden as like this giant betrayal. That's like this trope in stories about trans people where like hiding the fact that they're trans is somehow a betrayal of the people around them, or like... And that's a big part of this movie. But it is also, it's like, well, no, it's that you pretended to be a different person and you're...
Right.
Right.
But does play into like, well, of course, everyone understands that because of course we all think that's bad, you know?
Yeah.
It can play into that a bit. Mm-hmm.
And just kind of on a basic level of, you know, like a man donning a woman's identity and then learns the lesson, whatever the lesson may be, whether it's this movie, Tootsie, whatever. And then at the end of the day... Okay, he's back in a heteronormative space. Like, he returns to what everyone finds to be normal and acceptable.
Well, he does continue to be Mrs. Doubtfire forever.
On TV.
Yeah,
on TV.
Which, just taking away a role that a woman could have had entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, also, this movie was supposed to be filmed in Chicago, but ER said no.
Oh, really?
Remember when ER had enough power to just say you can't film in this whole city?
What? Wait, ER said no? ER was filmed here.
They said ER had a lease with the city during that time period.
They just leased the whole city?
What is the budget for ER? They could just lease Chicago?
What? Yeah, that doesn't...
I don't
weird.
Know. Oh, man, that's supposed really to be confusing. In Chicago, but then they relocated to San Francisco because
interesting.
ER?
Emily, real quick about your point a few moments ago.
Yes.
So the song Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith was
featured prominently in this
featured
movie.
Featured prominently, yeah. And it had like a resurgence because of this movie. Because it was, I think it first released in the late 80s and then, you know,
Oh, I assumed that it came out around the same time. Interesting.
No, I think it was 87, but don't quote me on that. That might be wrong. But so yeah, this song was like hugely popular again because of this movie. And I read a Vox article about Caitlyn Jenner's response to this song and basically being like, I love this song. And everyone's like, well, how about how it's very offensive to trans people?
Because it's still saying dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just read a quick paragraph from the article. It says, in general, the lyrics blur the line between being a trans woman, a cross-dressing man, or a man who simply has feminine traits. The song also plays on the idea that trans women intentionally deceive men or are in disguise.
That goes for Lola as well by the Kinks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm not super familiar with that song.
Same song set up.
And that they are unattractive or repulsive, as evidenced in one of the video's first scenes where Steven Tyler recoils at the sight of a construction worker whose gender identity is purposefully unclear. And at one point mixes pronouns going from, oh, she like it in one line to, oh, he was a lady in the next. So.
Also, that plays on a roller coaster at Disney World.
That yikes. Song.
Oh, really? Why does Aerosmith have their own roller coaster? Like, I'm not that upset about it. And my mom practically creams every time we go to Disney World and she gets to go on the Aerosmith roller coaster.
Wait, what episode did we first talk about that in? Was it the
how my mom... Okay, so how my mom tried and failed to be an Aerosmith groupie.
Yes.
And then became a groupie for this other band called the Beaver Brown Band, which was like supposed to be. My mom always, she was like, Beaver Brown was going to be as big as Aerosmith and nothing worked out for them. They couldn't catch a break. Check out the Beaver Brown Band. They are terrible. They are really bad. My mom just followed them around for a while.
Oh boy.
She's a, cute. What a wild child.
Can we talk about the scene between Miranda and Stu when he first comes to her office approaching her for basically like, ooh, help me design this Airbnb. Nope, that's not what it's called. just a B&B, a bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
And here's how this scene plays out. He says, and the pretense of the scene is that they're just having a business meeting and she's showing him designs.
She works at a design firm. Her boss has told her, like, yes, this guy asked for you specifically. Mm-hmm. Right.
So she starts describing what the look of this Airbnb, which is what I'm going to call it now.
She's in San Francisco. Like. Yeah. She could be developing Airbnb.
Right. She's just describing it. And he says, you've never looked better, or you look better than ever. And she ignores him and keeps talking business stuff. And he says, I've been following your career. Again, she barrels through and just keeps talking about the designs. He says, I'd love to get reacquainted. Again, she ignores him, keeps just talking business. Uh-huh. And then he says, can we talk over dinner? And that's what gets her to be like, yes, this is so nice. Which I think sends a dangerous message because...
To push past the no.
Yeah. She's ignoring
her. Her no does not mean no to
right.
him.
Also, yeah, like saying nothing doesn't, like, is a yes.
Right. Yeah. Because, like, this could be considered sexual harassment in the workplace.
Oh, for sure.
Because she's like, he's like, you look good. Let's go to get dinner.
This is a test where I suggest doing one of my favorite movie tests, which is replace the conventionally attractive male with Steve Buscemi in this scene. How does it hold up? And this scene would read as very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for
Steve Buscemi test.
Love it. For her character to not respond in the way you think she might because she's technically being harassed, for her to be like, oh, yes, this is so nice. Let's start dating. Because, I mean, they have
a history. They like dated in college,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And then also, like, you know, it's hard. What I'm saying is it's hard because Stu.
Yeah. Right.
Stu but, has nipples.
And I'm hard.
At the end of the day, I'm horny for Stu.
Yeah.
I will say that is like, there are two very refreshing things about the male characters in this movie, which is that like Robin Williams' character does not see his children as like a burden. He's like, mm-hmm. all he wants to do is spend time with them. And that's like not the most common thing.
Yeah.
But then also, yeah, like Pierce Brosnan's like, cool, single mom with three kids.
He's in.
There's a scene at the pool when, like, mm-hmm. when Mrs. Doubtfire overhears him having a conversation with the bartender that I kind of thought was going to, like, the bartender being like, you don't like kids. Why are you dating this woman? And you kind of think he's going to reveal, like, I actually
don't care. I'm
going to
steal money from her
or
something.
Just, like, I'm going to love her and leave her. And he's like, she's changed my mind because she's that amazing of a woman and I love these kids. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this is kind of tight.
I thought the same exact thing. Yeah. I thought there was going to be, like, a reveal that because I didn't remember exactly what happened in that story beat. And I was just like, oh, he's going to be revealed to be this, like, devious, sneaky, evil dude. But, like, no, he's just a pretty nice guy, it seems.
Well, a movie that this reminded me of that came out, came out a year later. The Santa Claus comes out a year after Mrs.
Doubtfire.
Oh, with
Tim Allen?
Yes, with Tim Allen, who Santa dies, and then Tim Allen is Santa because he witnessed Santa's death or something.
Well,
I forget
he's
what the
like
role is.
Maybe weirdly responsible for it. Whoever finds Santa's body is the new Santa.
Santa. So that's the movie. But it is, there's a lot of elements to the Santa Claus that is very similar to Mrs. Doubtfire in that it's a recently divorced couple. The dad is taking on this new identity.
Mm. And there's a little bit of a body horror element to it of they're both basically wearing fat suits.
I mean, they're both for sure wearing fat suits. And there is a Stu character in the Santa Claus, but it's done way less tastefully, I think, where Judge Reinhold plays this character. Because I remember having a crush on him when I was little and my mom being like, why would you like Neil? Also, his name is Neil. And it's where Neil is just as lovely a new partner for this mother. But the narrative is constantly like basically calling him whatever you would call a cuck in 1994.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is not masculine. This guy's a dweeb.
Their relationship is super desexualized.
Yes.
Whereas this is like, no, it's super sexualized.
Like, it's Pierce Brosnan. You can't just
there
cast
some,
Pierce Brosnan.
There are some definite inversions of the tropes here because, like, usually these movies have something to do with, like, the dad working too hard and not understanding what it is to be a father and not being
warm. Like in Kramer versus Kramer.
Kramer versus Kramer, Liar, Liar. Mm-hmm. All of those movies are about, like, a dad who has to learn how to, like, be a dad. And this is about the opposite. It's like he has the warmth, he has the fun, he has the interest in his children. What he needs to learn how to do is, like, be responsible.
Right.
And that's not usually how that goes.
That is interesting. I didn't think of it that way.
in some ways, it's like a way of elevating these like traditionally female characteristics of like nurturing and caring and rules and boundaries and stuff like that. The emotional labor that women do in these relationships.
Yeah, Sally Field's character can do, I mean, she can't like literally do everything, but she knows how to do everything. It's like she
can delegate too.
She was the breadwinner and she knew how to care for the kids. Like, yeah. You know, so, I mean, she's given all the skills and is not the villain of the movie ostensibly, but I do think that there is a subtext for kids that it's she's the mean one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's any mean one in this movie.
Yeah. Can we go back to the pool scene really quick? Because I just want to mention that there's a line where they're all like trying to get Mrs. Doubtfire to like put on a bathing suit to get in the pool. And she's just like, no, it would be like reenacting the Titanic. And I just wanted to mention
the Titanic
shout out.
It's true. So, okay. So Mrs. Doubtfire, I will say, just to start wrapping, is that I was expecting to have a lot more issues with this movie than ultimately I did, because I hadn't seen it in so long.
Yeah.
That when you hear the premise and then you hear the year it's made, you're like, oh, this is probably a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
It's not. There's a lot of missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is some stuff that is poorly handled.
Mm-hmm.
But
unlike other sort of cross-dressing movies that came out around this time, this movie doesn't seem like it's setting out to make a joke of the gender play as much as it is like, let's give Robin Williams a vehicle. It just seems like it's really catered to like what he's good at and ways he can be funny. And it's not, it doesn't seem like they're setting out to say anything about gender necessarily.
Right. Which is where like the missed opportunity comes in. But it's also like they're not there's 5 million hours of Robin Williams improvised footage that hit the
camera. Yeah.
Like I shudder. Like I just, it makes me exhausted just thinking of how much freestyle goofing took place.
A lot of it too, which is problematic, is he's like appropriating other cultures.
Oh yeah,
he's
there's like a couple racist things in here for sure.
Also very, very white.
Very white movie. No people with speaking lines. Speaking lines? No people with...
people of color with speaking
people,
lines?
Yes. Yeah.
We see a number of women over 40, but they're all mean. Also, Mrs. Doubtfire is technically a 60-year-old woman, but she is not real, and she is played by a 40-ish-year-old man.
Yeah.
Right, which makes for an interesting discussion about the Bechdel test. For me...
Because my friend Lisa, when she watches this movie, genuinely forgets that they're the same person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she just like has such a hard time keeping track of that. And she just thinks they're
that
different people when she watches it.
Very beautiful. It also makes her a very confusing watch of this movie.
Like, why is this dinner so stressful?
Well, for me, when I was trying to figure out if it passed the Bechdel test or not, I was not counting Mrs. Doubtfire's character as a woman, because even though that character is presenting as a woman, it's not someone who identifies actually as a woman. So to me, Mrs. Doubtfire is still
it's still a scene that a man can watch and identify with that character in some way.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that this would be harder to apply to a movie like Tootsie, where the male character does get so deep into the female persona, but this one is, it's all pretty surfacey.
Yeah, right, yes. So, because of that, I would say, I think the movie still does pass
it
the Bechdel
test.
It does.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's a scene where the daughters are talking about what they did in school that day.
Mm-hmm. I painted a picture of a bunny and a rainbow.
And the teacher liked it.
Yeah.
Ding!
Yeah. And there's also scenes where Nadia's like, why do we need a housekeeper?
Yeah.
Chewing out a little bit.
Yeah.
Why do we need a housekeeper anyway? Miranda says, this is all I need right now, because she's such a shrew.
They're literally shrewing at each other.
But then Lydia says, why can't Dad do it? So then she brings up a dad, and
that's
then
true.
It stops passing. But yeah, you would think there would be more, considering there are so many female characters in the movie between the two daughters and Miranda and all the many other women who you see, maybe only peripherally. But yeah, there's only those kind of handful of scenes where, there's another one where Miranda says, like, where were you guys? And they're like, we were upstairs doing our homework. Mrs. Doubtfire said we had to. But it's just these very quick exchanges. You think there'd be more for a movie that, you know, has so many women in it. But nope.
A lot of them are very isolated from each other.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that's true. Does anyone have any final thoughts before we rate the movie?
I think we talked about this a little bit, but yeah, the soundtrack of this movie, the four main tracks that are not instrumental are Dude Looks Like a Lady, Walk Like a Man, Luck Be a Lady, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. So whoever's choosing for this music for this movie, grow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's rate the movie on our nipple scale. Where we rate based on its portrayal of women, specifically. 0 to 5 nipples. Oh, this is another tricky one. I get, oh, God, I don't even know, maybe 2.5? Does it deserve more? Does it deserve
less? That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to go 3.
Wow. Ooh, all right. Well, we're ballpark.
I just wanted to give Pierce Brosnan 3 nipples.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it's like in the middle, 2.5, because what we already sort of mentioned, the missed opportunities to comment on more meaningful things, you know, gender roles and
I mean,
LGBT
also,
issues.
We haven't talked about this, but like child custody is one of men's rights activists' biggest war drum like issues. And this movie does kind of come down on their side a bit.
I didn't realize that
it
about
doesn't
the MRAs.
It. Yeah. Yeah. It's like men's rights activists are always talking about how women are favored in custody battles, and that's a proof that women don't have disadvantages in society. And it's like, give me a fucking break.
Give me a fucking tire iron.
So in that way, like, you know, they didn't know that when they made this movie, but also... Yeah. That is a little bit of a thing that gets played into here.
That's true.
And it is interesting that we see so much custody battle stuff as well.
Yeah. I mean, they lay a lot of pipe in those scenes, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
where they're
that's
like,
true.
That's when he explains, like, I need to see my kids every day. I've never not seen them every day. And you're mm-hmm. like, that's why he does the Mrs. Doubtfire thing. That's the first time we kind of hear that. But.
Right.
Yeah, even so, yeah. Missed opportunities and things could have been handled better or differently. But yeah, I'd say, like, it's probably, I mean, I haven't seen the movie White Chicks, but it probably does a better job when handling these issues.
That's a hot take.
I don't know for sure.
I haven't seen White Chicks, but I'm sure this is better.
Thank you so much.
I'm blown away. Okay.
You heard it here first. White Chicks probably isn't a good movie.
Feminist icons.
So yeah, 2.5, and Mrs. Selnar gets 2 of my nipples because I think she's underappreciated. She's just doing her job. She shows up on time.
She's
no one
doing
appreciates
her.
Best.
Her.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I think is really interesting about the Mrs. Selnar character is like she's so hostile to Daniel, but when she meets Mrs. Doubtfire, you're like, oh, she's relaxed. She's feels this immediate kinship, and you don't really, doesn't get explored that much, but you're kind of like, oh, I immediately see a different side of this character now that she's around a woman instead
of
a man.
It is nice to see that, yeah. And I'm sure, like, in context of her job, she has to deal with shitty deadbeat dudes
That's
all
true.
The time. Like, I understand the hostility.
She's like, let me take your face cream and also rub it on my face.
Yeah.
what a weird movie this is.
Oh, and then my other half nipple I will give to Harvey Fierstein.
He earned it, man.
He really did. Yeah.
I'll give it 2.5 as well. I'll succumb to the
don't,
two,
we don't
two
have
and a half
to, don't let us peer pressure you.
No, I'm with it. I'm giving 2.5 nipples to Pierce Brosnan to do with what he will. but I agree with what you're saying. I think that this movie would have worked a lot better for me if we saw even one scene of Miranda connecting with her kids or just like seeing that. Just because she is a single mom who works does not just automatically mean that she's cold and can't connect with her kids. Mm-hmm. So if we saw that, I think that it would have been a higher rating. But it's just mostly missed opportunities.
Yeah.
And kind of a little bit of lazy writing when it comes to writing female characters.
Yes.
Pierce Brosnan, however, does get all my nipples.
Well. That sends an interesting message, Jamie.
I'm sorry.
Would you like to rate it?
Problematic.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to round it up to 3 nipples, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just giving it some slack for when it came out and also like how much of this movie is just about Robin Williams and not about the premise of the movie.
Yeah.
He really just tears through this movie kind of regardless of what was in the script probably. And
he's like, give me a movie where I can do 40,000 voices.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, pretty much. And it was like, you know, at the time it was a perfect vehicle for him. So yeah, I'll give it 3 nipples. And again, yeah, sexualizing Pierce Brosnan. Hmm. And that being the only, like, sex in the movie I liked.
Reparations,
yeah.
baby.
Yeah, the female gaze was catered to in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Can you imagine? Like, yeah, just getting to be around Pierce Brosnan in 1993.
Dude, fuck.
There are a few moments in the movie where Daniel, usually dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire, will, like, kind of leer at a woman or, like, try to buy her a drink, which is weird because it's like you just experienced a guy hitting on you and how uncomfortable that made you. Why would you then turn around and do that and do same that, thing to a woman?
I think that that, harkens back to, again, of Mrs. Doubtfire just being strictly treated as a costume by the narrative as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he could have learned a little bit of a lesson, but turns out he didn't.
It's also funny that in those scenes, it's not like, oh, a woman bought her a drink, so she's creeped out, and not like, oh, a woman bought her a drink, and so she's so relieved that it's not a terrifying man.
Like, I'm like... Yeah, this is a lesser horror. Usually subjected.
Yeah, that didn't track. If an older woman was like, "Here, let me buy you a drink," I'd be like, "Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I would accept that so quick. I would just be like, "Oh, hell yeah! Wait, what?
Thank you.
All right."
Well, anyway, Emily, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. And for bringing us this movie.
Yeah.
Yes. Where can people find you online? Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
I'm at Mr. Emily Heller on everything. Also, I'm recording my second album on January 20th at Curious Comedy Theater in Portland. So if you live in Portland, please come to that. Also, after I watched this movie, my boyfriend made a lot of really funny Mrs. Doubtfire memes that I retweeted. So you
really?
Can just go find them.
Oh, great.
We will.
We amazing. Great. You can follow us at Bechdelcast on all the platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can go to our website, Bechdelcast.com. You can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/Bechdelcast. If you pay $5 a month.
These memes are really good. These memes are really funny. Anyway, sorry.
If you give us $5 a month, you get access to 2 bonus episodes per month, and then you help us with our production costs. Oh, man, I can't wait.
It's really funny. You can find me on Twitter at Hamburger.
And you can find me at Caitlin Durante.
Oh,
and,
my God. You guys got to check out these memes. They're really good.
We'll
the use
retweet.
Of capitalization is very funny. I've never seen hello written out, but he nails it. It's one capital O, 2 lowercase
O. Amazing.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening, and bye.
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 Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.